Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
All right, back in better than ever. Rolling along, Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance. Hashtag crew has surrounded us today. Cam has a ridiculous mustache for reasons known only to him.
Oh, God.
You just heard Christine Lisi mention that tonight is the WNBA draft and the expectation. Well, I shouldn't even say that. Caitlin Clark will be the first pick in the WNBA draft tonight. Of that, there is no question. 10 years ago, Chinne Agumbuke was the first pick in the WNBA draft. This is the 10th anniversary. Yesterday was actually the 10th anniversary of the date.
Wow.
And she was the WNBA Rookie of the Year. She is our outstanding analyst now for both professional and college basketball. And she's good enough to hang out with us for a few minutes here on ESPN Radio. Welcome back, Chinne.
Good to be back here and hanging with you.
Well, I remember so with such fondness our days back in the day before you became the mega star in the media that you are now. When you came in, you were here, you and Maria, and you'd be in there and get up, and we'd have all our fun, and you would make fun of me for being short. And
Absolutely. All
the rest of that. But I want you to just sort of jump in the middle of a conversation that Hembo and I just got into. We're going to get into Caitlin Clark. We're going to get into all that stuff. But so Alan Hahn tweeted, Jalen Brunson deserves MVP consideration because no one was more valuable to his team this year than Jalen Brunson was. And I said that even though I don't think I'm going to vote him first team all NBA, that I think there is some sense to that because all NBA is just I'm going to pick the five best players. But when I look at the term MVP, it is an acronym. It's not a word unto itself, Hembo. And the middle word is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So when... Let me just ask you a question without prejudicing the jury here, Chinne. If a player's team finishes last, can that player be the MVP?
No.
No. Why is that?
Because your value has to mean something.
Yes.
It has to translate to winning.
Uh-huh. Exactly. If we could finish last with you, we could finish last just as easily without you.
Who finished last year that we're talking about?
I mean, people have finished last. You're making an argument that because
you're strawmanning this. There's no last place team with, or player here at all.
Alex Rodriguez has won MVP on a last place
team. We're talking about Jalen Brunson.
Has won last place on a non-play.
What does Andre Dawson have to do with this?
Well, if Jalen Brunson's team had the record the Boston Celtics had right now, wouldn't you be giving him the MVP?
Oh, for sure.
So you're telling me because his team didn't win as many games as some of these other players would or did, that you would not be giving him the MVP award. And what I'm telling you is that if you took Jalen Brunson off the Knicks, they wouldn't be in the play-in. They would be, if Jalen Brunson had gotten hurt when all those other guys got hurt,
I agree.
Their season would have ended yesterday.
I think that's right.
And my point is, that's what valuable
yes.
means.
No, that's what valuable means to you.
What does it mean to you?
The player that produced the most value, otherwise known as the best player.
Who is that for you?
Jokic. Jokic is the best player in the league this year. The player that produced the most value this year.
But we're not saying it's a one thing. We're talking about all NBA, right?
We could be having either of those.
And like, if you see Jalen Brunson earning MVP votes, it is completely understandable. I think based off of what he has had to deal with players in and out of the lineup for the city of New York, and I don't know if people truly understand. You might be his height, Greeny.
Yeah.
We're talking about height.
I said that today on TV.
You might be even a little taller than
him. They listed
him 6'2". You might be taller than
him. Is there any way he's 6 feet tall?
He's 6 feet.
Okay, well, then I'm not taller than him. But okay,
he's lost a half an inch.
Yeah, I'm a half an inch.
You're shrinking?
I am.
Oh, well, you shrink when I come to
I'm
set.
I'm at that age.
Well, no, naturally, you shrink when I come to set.
Only figuratively, but I have literally shrunk. Which is yes. a whole other conversation for a whole other time. And there's so many things I want to get into with you here. I didn't want to get it sidetracked. But my point is, value has to mean something.
It does.
Shohei Ohtani last year is the MVP of the league in the American League, despite the fact that his team accomplished nothing. And they could have accomplished exactly the same thing without all of his home runs and without all of his strikeouts.
Yeah, but then you're penalizing a player for his surroundings, and I'm not comfortable with that. I think individual awards should be based upon the merit that the individual players generate themselves. That's all that I'm saying. I think Jalen Brunson is a second-team All-NBA player who would be somewhere between 6 and 10 on my MVP ballot. That isn't to disparage the season he had. I think that's exactly the player he was.
Okay. So let's leave that there because it's not the most important stuff to get into with Chinne. There are a million other things that I want to get into with her. Let's talk about the WNBA draft, and then if we have time on the back end, we'll look ahead to the NBA playoffs. But this is really something else. The Caitlin Clark thing, and you and I, you were nice enough to be on our show all the time in the lead up, and you guys, you and Elle and Drea, were so terrific with all the attention this received. And it was I mean, in every single way, this was a triumph. And now the question is, how does it carry over? Yeah. So Caitlin Clark becomes a megastar in a sport where, I don't know, I mean, I think on some level, women's college basketball has become more a part of the zeitgeist, the sport zeitgeist in America than the WNBA has. So this is an unimaginable opportunity for the WNBA.
Yeah.
Does it carry over, in your opinion?
I was saying this is the most important, quote unquote, off-season transition to the new season that the WNBA has had. Mind you, the WNBA is only 28 years old.
Yeah.
So if you look at where the NBA was in 28 years, they were looking for leaps, and then they got Larry Bird, Magic Johnson. Not saying that Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, but you're seeing a similar trajectory of star power that matters in the echelon of the women's basketball overall. I think that part of the magic that we witnessed this March is through the nature of the NCAA tournament. It's appointment television, win or go home. It's hard to translate that type of attention to a league like the NBA that has 82 games, or a league like the WNBA that now has 40 games. It's going to be difficult to translate like that appointment television of trying to win six games to a 40-game series,
right.
You know, season. Given all of that, it will. I was fortunate yesterday to speak to Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Cameron Brink, a number of the draft class that was there, about 9 to 12 players. These women are stars in a way that we have not ever seen in college sports before, meaning those numbers that we saw, what was it, 18 million in the championship game peaking at 24?
Yeah.
Certified stardom. Caitlin, when I asked her, what's one word that describes you as an athlete? She said passionate. A lot of people think, oh, she has to score at the high level, the high clip, in order to, like, people look at what we witnessed the last 2 years as, that's women's basketball. Honey, no. There's a history to the game. People think that she is the greatest player ever to touch a basketball. She's the greatest shooter we've seen in college basketball. But there are some amazing women that play in the W that she will have to learn to play with and against. Mm. So the expectation that these women that are truly mainstream stars, that their game is there at the highest level in the W, there's going to be a learning curve. But people will still watch because these women are who they are unapologetically. Watching them in meetings and interviews, they know what it's like to already be under a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the challenge is now, how do we continue to tell the story over a 40-game season that you care? And I think it's already happening. The narratives around Caitlin, what Diana Taurasi says, which, by the way, she's not singling out. Caitlin said, Diana would have said the same thing to me coming into the league. Oh, I'm going to get buckets. Like, she's going to have to adjust.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there are narratives based off of their greatness and what they achieved, this collegiate class, that I think will make people want to watch. You know, so I do think it's going to still be a challenge, the same way people are challenged to care about an NBA regular season that is 82 games.
You make an excellent analogy. I think that the comparison to Magic and Larry is a good one for a lot of obvious and some not so obvious reasons. But unlike you, I'm old enough to remember when that happened.
Yeah.
and the two things had to happen. Because what Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese did was they brought an unprecedented level of interest to a college game. I mean, that's exactly what Magic and Larry did. They changed it forever. Magic versus Larry remains the most watched basketball game in American history to this day at any level. But then when they went on to the next level, they became the two best players.
Correct.
And that's what really elevated it. We were into the storylines. We were into just how different they were stylistically and otherwise. They were great rivals, but they also became the two best players. And so for that to work, that has to happen. Is that what's going to happen now?
I don't think it's the same. I mean, there are not many Candace Parkers that can walk into the league, dominate, and become rookie of the year and MVP. Like, that is rare.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there's greatness in Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Cameron Brink and Camila Cardoso. But the truth of the matter, and this is something that my big sister talks to me all about, even as much as we're trying to build our own autonomy as women's basketball, and it's working, because the reason why a women's college game is doing really well is because we have the benefit of being in school for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
You follow us. You follow our stories. I think that's sort of what is struggling on the men's side to find that intrigue, right? To me, I think that there's always a comparison to the men's, right? And that's okay. But when I talk to my sister about the overall idea, to me, it's like, you fall in love with us as players. You fall in love with us as we evolve our game. You fall in love with the storylines of Caitlin going from, I think it's like 487 miles from Iowa to Indiana. There are different entry points that make us great in stars versus what it is in the men. Because at the end of the day, you know, we dunk, but we don't dunk as prevalently. We shoot, but people want to compare how we shoot. Look at the NBA All-Star game, right? There were, as great as Sabrina did, people still had stuff to say.
I thought she was phenomenal.
Thank you.
It was by far the best thing about the entire NBA All-Star weekend.
You know, but people still have thoughts.
Maybe the only good thing about the NBA.
People still have thoughts. They'll say like, oh, it's a women's ball. But like, bro, let me see you do that with a women's ball, okay, before you criticize.
But those are people who's...
They don't matter.
Yeah.
I agree.
Why are we even paying attention to that? Like, we're so far beyond worrying about that guy.
No, I agree. But I only bring that up to say that what makes women's basketball great is the story, right? And it's not necessarily they have to become the best player in the world. It's now you're following Caitlin Clark to see the women's college player that is, or period, the college player that shot the ball the best that we have ever seen statistically. What does she do with her career? She doesn't have to go out there and be Diana Taurasi from The Jump, who's the all-time WNBA leading scorer. She just has to fight. And that's why I brought up the word passion.
Yeah.
She just has to translate that passion. And that's what people fell in love with.
It's interesting because I remember when Steph came out of Davidson, and what did he go, seventh or eighth?
He went seventh.
He went something like seventh or eighth. And a lot of people, myself included, I as a basketball analyst, I'm passionate, but not necessarily very accurate, because I said, oh, that kid will never make it in the NBA. He's just much too small. Like, there's just no way in the world that what he did at Davidson will translate. He could become Kyle Korver. I mean, I forget who the comparison I was making at the time was. He can become Steve Kerr. He can become like a great shooter. And of course, here he is 20 years later, and he's, you know, one of the 10 greatest players that ever lived. So that's where Caitlin Clark comes in. But to your other point, people fall in love with sports because of the drama.
Yes.
And in order for there to be drama that matters, you have to have an emotional investment. So more than ever before, these players are coming into a league that we have already made an emotional investment in.
Yes.
Some people love Angel Reese. Some people don't love Angel Reese. The opposite. Some people can't stand Angel Reese. That's good for the sport. I don't know how good it is or bad for her. It's extremely good for the sport. You need someone to love. You need a protagonist and an antagonist. You need all of that stuff. So all these ready-made storylines walk directly into the league.
Yeah, and now I think one thing I know about these players is, amongst all odds, they deliver, right? A lot of people talk about what Angel Reese says, but do we talk about what she does? And she had 17 and 20 rebounds in that loss. You know, so to me,
she was the best player on the floor before she got hurt.
Thank you.
In that game, she was the best player on the floor before she got
exactly. hurt. Exactly. So I do think that, like, there's a lot of pressure on them to change the game. But, like, what we're seeing is that them changing the game, while we've seen it through Caitlin's pursuit of perfection when it comes to a shooter, we've seen it, like, Juju and Angel and Camilla and Hannah Hidalgo, their game is not perfect. They're just playing themselves unapologetically. And so I think if Angel goes in there, and she might struggle, maybe, you know, in the league, but if she's still consistently who she is, people will mess with that more than her perfection.
You make an interesting point. There aren't too many sports where you could just say the first names of five or six people and everyone will know who you mean.
It's true.
But everyone knows exactly who you mean.
Yeah.
And you try that with college basketball right now. I mean, men's college basketball right now wouldn't work. So that's an obviously an outstanding part of it. Let me ask you one more thing, because I've been here a long time, okay? How old are you?
I am 32.
Okay. So, I mean, I've been at ESPN 28 years.
Wow.
So I've seen it all come and go. I know you could have said that a little differently, but okay. So I've been around a long time. I've seen a lot of things come and go. In all the time I've been here, I've never seen a phenomenon like what you guys created this past month. It was maybe the earliest days of College Game Day, when they first started going on the road with Herbie and Lee Corso and all them. Like, it became a happening. And that I just would like to ask you, on behalf of all of the fans who watched it and enjoyed it, like, what was it like from the inside? Because we were all watching it from the outside, and I was thinking, my God, I mean, you guys became like rock stars. It was like watching the Beatles go up there. Like, it really was. Like, what was it like?
It was our wildest dreams, right? And I think particularly, and I'm just going to speak personally as a woman in sports, someone who plays and someone who also commentates, you never really expect to be noticed, even though you show up every day to try to be perfect so that people understand why you have a voice. And to me, like, in some ways, it's unfair. You know, like, you feel like I'm a top basketball player. I can talk on the men's. I can talk on the women's. I know the game, right? And I think we're at a point in society where people appreciate that game, recognize game. But to just show up and do what we've always done, it was surprising that people were like, whoa, this is amazing. And I'll never forget. So like after the Sweet 16 Elite Eight, we did the Sweet 16 and then we had to regroup for the Elite Eight. L, Dre and I came together. We're like, y'all, we don't ever get noticed talking women's basketball or even just women's basketball overall. And now everyone likes this. We're like, okay, just don't mess us up. Vibes, 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 and just keep showing up as we are. I think it's tremendous that people are ready to see the game that has always been there. I always say we're not new to this, we're true to this. I think I'm really grateful for, you know, I say here at ESPN, you are baptized by fire. They'll give you an opportunity and you'll either sink or swim. Working with you, I mean, I've only been here 8 years. You've been 20 plus, right? On top of that, working with you, working with countless others that have given us platforms to speak and to refine our skills got us to the moment where we felt comfortable doing what we do. And I, you know, like even just being here, working with Stephen A, who's always been a fan, and now like the platform, now the mainstream gets it, to me is the most rewarding. I'm still shook. I don't have words. We just want to keep it going and have fun and just do what we do. But like, it feels really good, Greeny, to be seen, because you know how we work, Drea, L, and so many women in the industry. We don't expect to be recognized, but to finally get a moment where you get some flowers, we don't know what to do with them flowers.
It was extremely well-deserved, extremely well. Janae, have a great night tonight. Again, let me make sure that I get it all right here. Tonight, the WNBA draft, you will see Caitlin Clark go first. Then you were telling me you think Cameron Brink goes second.
Yeah.
Tonight, all the action tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern time on ESPN for round one. You're
y'all,
the best. Thank
y'all
you.
Y'all are the best. I love y'all. And I like being in New York, just hanging with y'all.
All right.
Bring me back.
Anytime.
Come by anytime. We've got the whole NBA playoffs to go.
I got you.
All right. Fly Malika in, and you guys could just
I
do
know,
it
right?
from here.
We'll just do a takeover.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Greeny on ESPN Radio. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do. Big, small, and when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny, GREENY.
Greeny, the podcast.
All right, Greeny with you on ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Our performance of the week is brought to you by Skechers Footwear, stylish comfort for men, women, and kids. Who should we give that to, Hembo? I'm thinking about Jalen Brunson carrying the Knicks to the 2 seed.
Some say he's the MVP of the league.
Again, Alan Hahn said that. I'm not planning on voting him for MVP, but I definitely think he deserves consideration. His value to his team was disproportionate to the quote unquote value generated that you just add up mathematically, which is to say there may have been other players who contributed more points, rebounds, assists, and whatever, But they didn't. That does not, by definition, mean they meant more to their teams than he did.
That's an interesting way to put it. So let's say I'm fairly certain. I don't remember this exactly, but I'm fairly certain an MVP ballot is 10 names. I want to say.
Is that in baseball?
No, in basketball.
No, definitely isn't 10 names.
You're
I want
sure
to say
it's only
it was five.
Okay, let's say it's five. I'll double check that.
I voted the last 2 years, and now I'm trying to remember. I think it's one through five.
Okay. So are you saying that there is you're going to vote him second team All-NBA, but he'll be among the top five MVP votes for you, which is a very interesting thing because what you're saying is that those are two different questions.
They are two different questions. One of them is the five best players in basketball. That's first team All-NBA. The other one is who was the most valuable to his team. Let me ask you a question. Which team finished with a better record, Giannis's team or Jalen Brunson's team?
Jalen Brunson's
Which
team.
One would you have expected that to be the case?
I would expect Giannis's team.
Everyone on planet Earth would have. So I think Giannis had a better year, but was he more valuable to his team than Jalen Brunson was to his? We're not debating the same thing. I'm not arguing what you're arguing. I'm telling you that value is not just in... See, you nerds have taken over sports, and you've inserted the word value in a way that is new to the sports vernacular, which is to say, how much value does this player create? And I get it. I understand what you mean by that, and it is a good measurement. So if you're signing a player to a contract or something like that, you say, well, how much value am I getting? If he's going to give me, let's just use baseball, X. If you're Shohei Ohtani, his value is incalculable because he's giving you so much of this and so much of that when those two numbers together equal something that we've never seen before. I get that. But Shohei Ohtani's team finished last. So I wouldn't have voted for him for MVP because if you had taken away everything that he had done for his team, they would have finished in exactly the same place. They just would have been worse doing it. Mm-hmm. But what they accomplished was meaningless. I remember Andre Dawson got so freaking mad because I remember saying he didn't deserve to win the MVP when he was on the Cubs and they finished last. Not because he wasn't the best player, but the award isn't the best player. If you want to make the award the best player, do that. Vote for the MOP, the most outstanding player, like they do in the NCAA tournament. I'm all over that.
But I happen to think that O and V are interchangeable.
But they most certainly aren't.
Oh, they definitely are. Outstanding and valuable are interchangeable terms in that context.
They're not. They're absolutely not. Valuable, I mean, I don't know how to define. Bubba, help me. Am I right here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised Hembo, of all people, is just going to say outstanding and valuable are exactly the same.
But what you're saying is the most valuable player is, by definition, the most outstanding player.
That's what I'm saying.
And I'm saying I don't agree with that at all.
That's fine. So I'm actually looking at your MVP ballot last year. You went Embiid, Jokic, Giannis, Tatum, and it looks like you had Donovan Mitchell fifth.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that this year, because I'm fine with this logic trail, what you're saying is that this year you're going to have Jalen Brunson, second team All-NBA, but he'll be ahead of at least one of those people on your MVP ballot.
I think so.
Okay, and I'm comfortable with that. For me, though, voting MVP, I want to take out as much things out of a player's control as possible. I think what's happening here is that you are giving Jalen Brunson like a big boost because the environment around him was so poor. And I don't like taking things into account that players cannot control. That's all that I'm saying.
Well, but how about if a player, see, I think you're turning that on its head. This used to be the argument I remember a lot of times for voting against not voting for different Yankee players as the MVP because their team was just so loaded. So no matter what this guy did, he wasn't as valuable because he wasn't carrying a team. And there is some logic to that, unfair though it may be. You're making the case that's unfair. Mm-hmm. And I don't disagree with you on that. But here's what I will say. Jalen Brunson didn't just have a lesser team. His team got decimated by injury as it was going, as the season was going, and he put them on his back by himself. Like his numbers in the context in which he put them up were more valuable than some slightly higher numbers that might have been compiled by someone else. In the same way, I don't know how Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I don't know how he's getting left out of this because his team was not projected by anyone to be anything like what it has been, and he has led the youngest roster ever to a first seed. They've been seeding these teams since 1984. That's 40 years. And this team is by a two-year margin the youngest team ever to accomplish that. And they have a lot of really good players that nobody knows anything about. But SGA is overwhelmingly the best one.
Yeah, so OKC, in terms of just this season, they were the second youngest team in the NBA. The Spurs were the youngest. The Pistons were the third youngest. And those two teams were a combined 36 and 128.
And OKC finished with the best record in the West. And the second, no, the third, second best record in the league.
It's unbelievable.
Second best record in the league.
I kind of like where we're at here, though, because I'm probably much too quantitative in my logic. And I think you're somewhere much more on the qualitative side. In reality, we should probably meet somewhere in the middle.
Here's where we should meet. Sports is not just a science. It's an art. There's art to go with the science. Now, the problem that you get sometimes with former players and others is they just want it to be all art. They just want to say, this is what my eyes see, and so don't give me a bunch of numbers on a spreadsheet. And that's super dated thinking. But what I think happens, as typically happens in life, is the pendulum swung too far in the other direction, or has swung, to where now advanced metrics and statistics are the only way that we measure things. Why? Because it's easier. It's easier to do. You can offer an opinion that cannot be refuted. Like, you show me numbers on a piece of paper. How can I argue that you're wrong? Here, Greeny, he produced the most value because he scored 31 points per game, and his minutes per, you know, and his points per minutes on the floor were X, and he contributed this Y, and the team's defense was Z, and here are all the numbers, and they add up to this, and I can't fight that. But that doesn't sometimes mean that there isn't a little room for the beauty of all, the gorgeousness of sport in all of this. And that's sort of where I'm coming from. It's a good debate, and one in which, as usual, I'm right and you're wrong. Feeling great starts with a great shave, and great shaves start with Barbasol Shaving Cream. That's Barbasol Shaving Cream, an American classic for over 100 years. Close shave America, close shave Barbasol.
The Scoop.
Some breaking news. I wouldn't describe this as monumental, but I think, and it's not surprising, but it is now out there, and it's worth talking about. Bubba, Cowboys fan extraordinaire, Adam Schefter has tweeted, Cowboys wide receiver C.D. Lamb isn't expected to attend the start of Dallas's voluntary offseason program today while he awaits a new contract to replace the one scheduled to pay him a fully guaranteed $17.199 million for his upcoming fifth-year option season. Now, again, these are voluntary off-season programs, and thus there are no fines, there are no anything, there are no consequences. But it does feel telling when you consider how all in that team says they are and need to be for this season, that C.D. Lamb, who I remind everyone, his mother has been all over social media criticizing Dak, talking about how great it would be if he, C.D. Lamb, could have found a way to get to Houston to play with C.J. Stroud, which obviously happened with Stephon Diggs and everything else. I do believe we are living in a world where the Cowboys are going to have to address this. They're going to have to get a new deal done with C.D. Lamb this offseason in order for him to come in and play. And there have been a lot of whispers of that. Now this is the first concrete step toward it.
Yeah, the Cowboys' financials are a disaster. And I want to use the example, as you might expect, of the Eagles versus the Cowboys when it comes to how you manage your homegrown drafted stars, players at premium positions. We just learned this morning that the Eagles are going to extend DeVonta Smith. He's their number two wide receiver, drafted, by the way, a year after C.D. Lamb. And as soon as they're able to lock him up, they do it. That's the Howie Roseman playbook. Once Jalen Hurts proved that Jalen Hurts was going to be a franchise quarterback, they locked him up immediately. You set the market, you overpay at the time, and by the end of the contract, it winds up looking like a bargain. Where are the Cowboys at? Well, the Cowboys are at a place where Dak Prescott has all the leverage in the world at the quarterback position. C.D. Lamb, who's a year older than DeVonta Smith, is going to probably set the market when you have to pay him. And by the way, Micah Parsons, who's eligible for an extension now, we think they might go year to year on too. That's deeply unserious team building. What's the point of hitting on your draft picks, building stars, grooming stars, if you're not going to pay them as soon as you're able? It doesn't make any sense the way that the Cowboys are doing it. The Eagles are doing it right, and the Cowboys are doing it wrong.
I hear you. The Cowboys have two different situations among three different players. They have Micah Parsons and C.D. Lamb, who, for all intents and purposes, they still control. They will control. They, the Cowboys, will control how those situations end. However, what they have managed to box themselves into, which is practically unprecedented, in a sport where ownership has total control of the proceedings, where the players are legendarily powerless since the inception of the league, they have allowed Dak Prescott to get to a position where he will unilaterally dictate what happens with him. And when Mike Tannenbaum said the Cowboys should consider addressing his replacement in the draft this year, I understood what he was saying. People were making it sound like he was diminishing Dak. He's doing nothing of the kind. If Dak Prescott wants this to be his last year of the Cowboys, there's almost nothing they can do about it. Almost nothing. Beyond, to your point, overpaying dramatically. But so many teams will pay him a lot of money. And do we live in a world where the idea of a player walking away from being the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys still feels weird? Sure, because there were so many ancillary benefits. But with all the nonsense that he deals with on shows like ours, look, you got the two shows on ESPN in the morning, back-to-back, that, I mean, immodestly, a lot of people pay attention to, right? Ours and Stephen A's. All we talk about are the Cowboys. We do it, and he does it, in different ways, but we do it. And Dak gets talked about all the time, and he gets picked apart for things that most quarterbacks just get ignored. I mean, every time he throws an incomplete pass, it trends on Twitter, in some part because everyone is paying it. He may like a world in which he doesn't live that way. He may like a world in which he's the quarterback of the, I don't know, Minnesota Vikings a year from now, or someone else. I insert any other team here, the New England Patriots, something like that, where he doesn't have to live his life like that. And if that's what he wants, there isn't a damn thing the Cowboys can do about it.
It's so bizarre because Jerry Jones is this shrewd businessman who has built his football team into this international behemoth, and yet he gets these things wrong that no other owners get wrong.
See, but now I disagree with you.
Tell me why.
Because now you're putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable, which is to say Jerry Jones didn't build his team into a $10 to $12 billion enterprise because of how many games he wins. He built them that because they are the soap opera, they are the drama, they are the Broadway show. I mean, Michael Strahan, I think, said on Fox one day when they had lost a game, he said, if there was anything I could ask Jerry Jones to do as a former player, it would be to let these guys just be football players. But he doesn't want that. We just spent 15 minutes talking to Chinne Agumuke about how incredibly valuable it is for women's basketball to have created these stars. That's what Jerry Jones has gotten right. And you know what? Not winning a championship doesn't actually have any impact on that at all. So does he want to win? Of course. Everyone wants to win, and they aren't mutually exclusive. But I think he thinks he's won. And in every other way that matters, he's right. Bubba, how do you feel today?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'd prefer him to be there, but like we said, it wasn't surprising. And, you know, you mentioned the stuff with Jerry. I mean, in the end, really, there's never been a time where it hasn't worked out. Has it gone smoothly? No. There's been issues kind of throughout the times in the past. But, you know, the Dak thing eventually got worked out, and we'll see what happens. So I think no matter what happens, CD is going to be there. If it takes a long time, if it takes till the end of the training camp or whatever it is, right before week one, I think they're going to sign him. It might not be the best, you know, plan, whatever it is. But, I mean, CD has been unbelievable for them. I can't believe this is already going to be his fifth year. I mean, it's gone by so fast. He's gotten better every year. He's been unbelievable. His stats are insane. So we have to sign him. And I think Jerry's going to sign him. It just depends on when is it going to happen. So I'm confident he's going to be there. I'm not worried at all. It's just you'd rather have him be out there. It's just going to happen eventually.
Okay, so we'll see. And again, to me, CD is not the problem. Micah Parsons is not the problem. Dak Prescott is the problem. They have put themselves in a trick box, and he's the only one who has a key. Hembo trivia, go.
Yes, group trivia. There are six coaches in NBA history to win at least 100 games in the playoffs. You are going to give me, as a group, the six coaches in the history of the NBA to win at least 100 playoff games.
Oh, that's a great question. because the playoffs used to be so much shorter. I'm already trying to make up my mind if Fred Auerbach would have won 100 playoff games. We're back with the answer next on ESPN Radio. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greeny, the podcast.
This is Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance. A Progressive, they're making things even easier to help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. All right, it's a good one. Here we go.
I'm looking at a list. I am looking at a list of most wins in the playoffs by a coach in NBA history. There are six coaches with at least 100 playoff wins, and you got to give me all six.
All right, we need six names. Here, guys. So we've been going over them. There were a few that we think are just stone cold lead pipe locks, right? So I'm just going to run through the obvious ones. Pat Riley.
That's correct. Yeah. He's second with 171.
Phil Jackson.
He's first with 229.
Greg Popovich.
He's third with 170.
Those are the three easiest ones. Now, Bubba and Cam are extremely confident in Eric Spoelstra. I am slightly less confident in Eric Spoelstra, but I think I don't have a better choice.
I just thought of someone else, not necessarily more than Spoelstra, but let me just throw this out here. Jerry Sloan.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Sloan was the coach there for 1,000 years. They made 2 NBA finals. All right, so the names we have written down are Eric Spoelstra, Doc Rivers, Red Auerbach, and they've come to the conclusion it's not going to be. He handed it over to Russell. In those days, you could only win 8 playoff games. So that's just too many. And then I'm just thinking of other possible names. Steve Kerr, Casey Jones, Lenny Wilkins, Don Nelson, Dick Motta, Billy Cunningham. I kind of like yours there. Well, Steve Kerr. So which one do you guys want to go with next? You want to go with Kerr?
I honestly feel most confident in Kerr. They've gone to 6 finals.
Right.
And they went 7 in one of those that they lost and 6 in the other one. Yeah. So that's like...
I mean, that's way more
than
Spoelstra.
That's over 90 right there.
It's got to be.
All right, let's lock in Kerr.
It's got to be Steve Kerr.
That's wrong.
Oh!
Cam, I'm going to kill you and your mustache.
Great mustache!
Is it Eric Spoelstra?
Yes.
Of course it is.
He's fifth with 109.
Is it Doc Rivers?
He's fourth.
Of course it is.
With 111.
And the sixth...
We need one more.
Is it Jerry Sloan?
You've yet to say his name audibly.
Wow. Okay, hold on. Now I'm really intrigued. Give me an era. I mean, a rough era.
He coached from 1977 through 2011.
It's not Don Nelson? 1977?
Don Nelson.
Larry Brown.
Larry Brown.
Oh, my God.
Larry Brown is sixth with exactly 100 playoff wins.
That's crazy.
How many does Kerr have?
99.
You stink.
Are an evil human being. 99. Good God. The play-in doesn't count, right?
Play-in doesn't count.
No, if the play-in counted, he would have 100.
Yep, that's right.
That is excruciatingly evil on the answer there. Okay, that's a great question. I love these trivia questions, and we'll enjoy. Let's see what winds up happening with the NBA play-in games this weekend, or this week, excuse me, and then on to the NBA playoffs. But let's make sure that we spend some time on the most important thing today, and that is 77 years ago today is the most important date in the history of American sports, and in its own way, one of the most important days in American history. And that is April 15th, 1947, when Jackie Robinson took the field as the first baseman that day for the Brooklyn Dodgers, becoming the first black player to play Major League Baseball in the 20th century. Since 2004, baseball has honored his legacy by celebrating this day as Jackie Robinson Day. All 30 Major League Baseball teams will play and will honor Jackie Robinson. His number, of course, has been retired across the sport and everything else. You and I wrote books, and I remember writing in our first, in our book in which we gave Jackie his number, we made the point that there's no way to do justice the significance of Jackie Robinson in any short form. Like, we, you know, our chapters were 600-700 words. And as I wrote in the book, many, many, many books have been written and far more will be written about the impact that Jackie Robinson had, not just on the sport, but on American culture. And so almost impossible to do that justice, even in a conversation like this.
Yeah, Jackie Robinson breaking baseball's color barrier, in my opinion, was perhaps the single most important cultural event that took place on American soil during the 20th century. I think what is perhaps most important to stress as it relates to when Jackie broke the color barrier is that he did so more than a year before Harry Truman issued an executive order that began desegregating the military, and 7 years before Brown versus Board of Education. Like, baseball as an institution desegregated before much of the rest of America. So Jackie doing what he did, when he did it, cannot possibly be overstated. Here's something that Martin Luther King once said about it. He said, quote, "Jackie Robinson made my success possible. Without him, I would have never been able to do what I did." I don't think anyone could possibly sum it up better than that.
Or more significantly than
or
that.
Or more significantly
yeah.
than that.
Yeah, and look, I mean, Jackie Robinson, you can't overstate his impact. You can't overstate his import or his importance.
Mm-hmm.
On this day, I also always like to make mention of Larry Doby. Because, and I admitted this with great embarrassment, and I have admitted it many times, but I think the fact that I didn't know it should be something, suggests that there are a lot of other people who don't know it. So Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in April of 1947. Just months later, Larry Doby became the first black player in the American League. And bear in mind, of course, that they were never going to the same stadiums. They weren't playing in the same places. He was just as... He will never be the first, and so he will never be as remembered. And, of course, Jackie going first did, on some level, probably make it a little bit easier. But Larry Doby probably experienced the overwhelming majority of the same things that Jackie Robinson did in desegregating the American League. And in the late 90s, you could tell me what year it happened, I was an anchor on ESPN News, and Larry Doby was voted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he came on
in 98.
In 98, and I interviewed him. They assigned me the interview. And so I went. I, of course, had heard his name. I remember him as a player. I remember him as a manager. I don't remember him as a player, but I'm aware of him as a player, and I'm aware of him as a manager. And it was not until I started doing the research for that interview that I realized this, that Larry Doby's contribution to this, while in no way it meant to diminish or detract from the significance of Jackie's, also deserves to be remembered. So I always try and remember or mention that on this day for him, for his family, and for everyone who knew and loved him. But that's not the headline today. The headline today is Jackie, and as well it should be, and I agree with you, it's one of the most important days in American history well beyond the framework of sports.
Yeah, if I had the opportunity to go back to almost any day in the history of sports and be there that day, it might well be at Ebbets Field on April 15th, 1947. Just to see Jackie Robinson's black skin juxtaposed with like that almost impossibly white Dodger uniform, that iconic Dodger uniform, and to see that happen, I mean, perhaps in the moment, people were able to understand the impact or importance of it, but I think over the course of time, it has just proven to be the most seismic event that we could have possibly ever imagined, and he was the exact right person at the exact right time to pull it off.
It's interesting, too, because we use the expression, you know, being on the right side of history. I mean, the reality is this was an extraordinarily controversial day. And think about how many people were on the wrong side of history and just how right the right side proved to be. So anyway, that is the most important thing that we will tell you today. Beyond that, we will be back and better than ever tomorrow. Hopefully Campbell has shaved on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Greeny, the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcasts.